Thanks very much, Doug and Father Serafino, for inviting me. For you all for coming out on a getting cold night, getting a bit nearer to winter. Reading Father's book, I think it's a very powerful book. I found it sort of very hard-hitting in the sense, and I think it's designed to shake us up a bit, you know, because I think we're all getting a bit complacent about things from time to time. So I found it a book that's to make you think, but not a difficult book to understand, because I think Father's trying to get over this sort of central message about devotion to Our Lady's Immaculate Heart, which is really a very important part of the Fatima message. But it's came in the June apparition, you know, Our Lady speaking about God wanting to establish devotion to her Immaculate Heart in the world. And it's just one sentence, so it's easy to skip over it. And so really the book, in a sense, is a sort of, I suppose, an analysis of what that means, and that's how it builds up to that at the end. I mean, I made a few quotes that, which I'll just, you know, quickly say from Father's book, about saying, Fatima warns us, sin is the true evil of the world and of humanity. Sin in itself is always loss, emptiness. It can never become goodness. And then Father carries on to say, Our Lady appeared at Fatima precisely to give a remedy to the real evil of sin. She herself, her Immaculate Heart, if we enter into her heart, we are free from evil. So that sin is something that tends not to get mentioned very much. You know, we don't hear much about sin. I suppose it's understandable because we tend not to dwell on it, and we don't want to feel that we are sinners. But unfortunately, that's the way it is. You know, we are sinners. And somehow we just got to keep starting again all the time. And, you know, Sacrament of Confession is there for that. And that's part of the Fatima message. And I'll talk a bit about that in Five First Saturdays, where one of the conditions is going to confession every month. And I think if all Catholics in Britain were to go to confession once a month, that would boost the church tremendously, because it's such an important sacrament. So that, anyway, this idea of entering into the heart of Mary, I think that's the key to Father's book. Well, I'm not going to obviously quote too much from it. You can best if you read it yourself. And but just one or two things. This idea of you know, war being a punishment for sin was one of the things which comes out of, again, I'll go into this in a minute, about the message Our Lady gave in July 1917, where that was when she revealed the secret of Fatima. That was in three parts, and showed the children the vision of hell. So again, that emphasizes the seriousness of the Fatima message. This idea of what we do in the world has consequences. You know, it's not just we can just do what we like and everything's just going to go on fine. There are consequences in the moral order which then impact on the physical world. So that's what Our Lady was saying, you know, with the First World War, if people didn't pay attention to what she was saying, then there would be a worse war, and Russia would spread its errors throughout the world, which is exactly what happened with communism and now secularism, which is what we are living through, you know, our secular and materialistic society. So the Fatima message, even though it's 100 years old, it's very much up to date with what's happening in the world. I mean, this idea of, as the children did at Fatima, you know, they offered up sacrifices, and obviously we're not very good at that either. But it doesn't have to be on the same level necessarily as the children. As Father says, you know, we can just do things such as be more patient, be less critical, don't waste time watching too much TV or on the internet. There are all sorts of little sacrifices we can make, just like the children of Fatima or Saint Therese of Lisieux. You know, this sort of like there's a little way to reach God as well. And obviously all these devotions are all coming from the one God, so they're all pointing in the same direction. Well, there's a lot in the book, so I can't really obviously say to everything, but I mean, such things as, you know, Our Lady and Jacinta in particular talking about the need for purity, which is something which is even more necessary nowadays than a century ago, when the, you know, the children were living. I've just made a few notes as well. Towards the end of the book, Father comes on to the idea of, you know, the secret of the secrets, if you like, this idea of devotion to Our Lady's Immaculate Heart, which, if it's to spread around the world, that is a massive job for the Church, which, in a, you could almost say 100 years after Fatima, it hasn't really started, or it's only just getting off the ground. So there's a huge amount to do, which is what the World Apostolate of Fatima is about spreading the message, you know, in a practical sense. So this idea of the heart as being the inner sort of life of the person, so the Immaculate Heart of Mary, her pure, the person of Our Lady. So God wants this devotion in the world, and Our Lady obviously it was full of grace, as the angel at the, you know, the Annunciation said. So we need to become devoted to this heart, and then we'll see that the heart of Mary, as Father says in the book, is the heart of the Church. So somehow God wants us all to move in that direction of greater devotion to Our Lady, and that's how the Church will be renewed, ultimately, you know, in our times. So again, that's why the Fatima message is so important. And then we'll have this triumph of Our Lady's Immaculate Heart. So it's all there in the book. I won't say any more, but you can buy a copy, and there's a lot of good reading there. So now, I'm just going to talk now a bit about the message of Fatima, and I'm going to speak a little bit about what can we do as a practical thing to spread the message, and what, in other words, the devotion to Our Lady's Immaculate Heart, that is really a very deep sort of devotion, really, in the sense that it involves this sort of complete giving of ourselves to Our Lady, and we're all at different stages spiritually, and without any doubt, it's very difficult in the modern world to there are so many distractions, there are so many problems compared to 100 years ago. We're struggling, really, but I'm sure God's grace is there for us, you know, providing we're praying. So what I'm talking about is, in particular, the Rosary and the five First Saturdays devotion, which were two of the things that Our Lady particularly focused on. But I'm just going to briefly look at things. The July apparition, which I mentioned, that was when the secret and the vision of hell, and then a little bit about the October apparition, which was the miracle of the sun. But something I should have just asked at the beginning, I thought, how many people have been to Fatima here? Oh, there's a good number of you, it's probably getting on to half. Okay, so Our Lady appeared, you know, six, for those who haven't been or don't know much about it, Our Lady appeared in 1917 to three children, Jacinta, Francisco, and Lucia, and for six months on the 13th of each month, from May to October. So that was just over 100 years ago. And the year before that, the angel, who called himself the Angel of Portugal, or the Angel of Peace, appeared to the three children, taught them some prayers, and prepared them for their meeting with Our Lady. So that, in a nutshell, is Fatima. And at the same time as that was happening, the World War I was going on. So the miracle of the sun, it was in October 1917, that was seen by 70,000 people. But obviously there were no film cameras, or very primitive film cameras, and World War I took everybody's attention. So it took quite a long time for the Fatima message to spread outside Portugal. But that's what the essence of the Fatima message is. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that, the miracle. Just mention the brown scapular and the daily rosary. And a little bit about the rosary in history. Because Our Lady is saying, you know, that praying the rosary every day. And we've got examples from history where when people have done that and really taken up the rosary, it's changed history. So it's got, the rosary's got that sort of inner power, which if we use it, you know, and become and pray the rosary properly, particularly if people get together and pray, that we got the ability there to change things in a big way. So the rosary, the five first Saturdays of devotion, a little bit about the consecration of Russia and John Paul II, and then the canonization of the children. And at the end, I'll mention the world a bit about the world apostolate, which is what I'm representing. So I've spoken a bit about, so Fatima's in Portugal. The three children were very young. At the time of the first apparition, they were only, Lucia the eldest was only 10, Francisco was 9, and Jacinta was only 7. So these were really young children to be given such an important message. So an advantage, though, in a sense of spreading the message is that there's something there that children in primary school or children generally can grasp onto, that they were young children, so they can identify. So that's a good aspect of it. Children came from a little hamlet called Aljustrel, which is about 2 kilometres, about a mile and a half away from where Our Lady actually appeared. And they were just taking the sheep out, the family sheep. They had the experience with the angel the year before, but they kept quiet about it. And so that was their sort of secret. And they weren't expecting to see Our Lady. They just thought, well, the angel taught them some prayers, and they were praying intensely. So they saw Our Lady for the first time on the 13th of May. Unfortunately, I haven't got time to go into all the apparitions, but you can read a bit in Father's book. And there are plenty of other books about Fatima, you know, available. Now, you should have all got a little slip, you know, with eventually they'll get round to you, which has just got a little bit of info about the World Apostolate, just the website, and if you wanted to sign up for the newsletter. But it's got information about books there. So if you wanted to expand your knowledge of Fatima, there's plenty of material. So this is what Our Lady said on the 13th of July. She spoke about, she wanted the children to come there the next month, so that was August, to continue to pray the rosary every day. So she'd been asking to pray the rosary in honor of Our Lady of the Rosary in order to obtain peace with the world and an end to the war. She said, because only she can help you. So that was the importance of the power of the rosary, bringing peace and ending the war. And as we probably aware, World War I was a particularly brutal and horrible war. You know, in the trenches, men getting machine gun, it was just a nightmare. So, and the two sides were sort of locked and no one wanted to give ground. So ending that war was a big task. So she said to the children, continue to come here every month. In October, I'll tell you who I am, what I want. I'll perform a miracle for all to see and believe. So this was the miracle of the sun 3 months later. And this was prophesied 3 months in advance. That was why there were 70,000 people there, because the news spread all over Portugal. And there hasn't been anything like the miracle of the sun since the resurrection, a miracle on that scale and with being prophesied in advance and with such a large number of people there. So that in itself gives us an idea of how important the Fatima message is, that the size of the miracle is an indication of the importance of the message. Because, for instance, at Lourdes, you've got plenty of miracles, but they weren't, they're if you like, on a small scale, are important for the people, but not on the big scale of Fatima. That was when she also gave a little prayer, you know, as we say at the end of the rosary, oh my Jesus, you know, and so on. So then she showed the children the vision of hell, which they only saw for an instant, but from that point on, they changed really, in the sense that before that they were just sort of, you know, still carefree children. After that they became much more serious. And some people nowadays are saying, well, hell doesn't exist, or if it does exist, there's nobody there. But Our Lady showed the children that there were people in hell and demons, and it's more for us to take the whole thing seriously. You know, it's as a sort of dogma of the faith, really, and Christ spoke about hell, so we can't just ignore it. It's there as an ultimate punishment for people who reject God. So that was the first part of the secret, and The first and the second part, the secret Our Lady gave the children, didn't come out till about 1941, and then the third part came out in 2000, when John Paul II. So this is what Our Lady said: "You've seen hell, where the souls of poor sinners go. To save them, God wishes to establish in the world devotion to My Immaculate Heart." So that's what Father's book is about, really, especially towards the end. So that, and that's why it's important. Our Lady repeated that. If what I say to you is done, many souls will be saved and there will be peace. So this was a message for the church and the world. And if people listened, then there would be peace in the world. That's what Our Lady, and also that many souls being saved. So the implication is some of those people are going to be going to hell. The war is going to end. That was World War I. But if people do not cease offending God, a worse one will break out during the pontificate of Pius XI. So that was the next pope, although the pope at the time was Benedict XV. "Now when you see a night illumined by an unknown light, know this is the great sign given you by God. He's about to punish the world for its crimes by means of war, famine, persecution of the Church and of the Holy Father." Well, that sign came in 1938. It was... if you like, science would call it an aurora borealis, you know, the northern lights, which, unlike normally, is just very high up. You've got the lowest they come in Britain is northern Scotland. I was up there once and I could see the northern lights, but it never comes any lower than that. But in 1938, they came right to down to southern Europe, and people saw the whole sky on fire almost, with these sort of red flames, what looked like flames. And this was a great sign that World War II was coming, because people had not amended their lives. And a lady said, this is very important, "To prevent this, I shall come to ask for the consecration of Russia to My Immaculate Heart and the communion reparation on the first Saturdays." So she talked about all those evil things that were going to happen, and she said, "To prevent this, I'll come to ask for those two things, the consecration of Russia and the communion of reparation, which is the first Saturday's devotion." So it's very important that those two things are linked. So Our Lady came back in 1925 and 1929 to speak about those two things to Sister Lucia. But she actually mentioned them first in July 1917. So keep that at the back of your mind. "If my requests are heeded, Russia will be converted and there will be peace. If not, she will spread her errors throughout the world, causing wars and persecutions of the Church." Unfortunately, Russia was not converted at that time, and the errors of Russia, communism initially, did spread throughout the world. And what's happened now, I mean, for instance, one example of the errors of Russia, almost immediately, in about 1919 and 1920, I think, so straight after more or less straight after the Communist Revolution, they introduced abortion and divorce. So Russia was the first country to introduce abortion, you know, as a sort of medical, something you went to hospital for. So anyway, what's happened now is, although communism has collapsed in Eastern Europe and Russia, still going strong in a modified form in China and other countries out in the Far East. But in our society, the West, all those errors like abortion, divorce, secularism, it's all spread into our society. So this is why our society is in such a mess. You know, it didn't exclusively come out of communism. It goes right the way back to the Reformation. That was when the rot really started. And then the French Revolution, communism, Russia, and now what we're living through, this sort of culture of death, which is what John Paul II called the society we're in. And it's all focusing on death, as you can see it. Abortion, killing the unborn, euthanasia, getting rid of people who are getting towards the end of life. There's all this focus on, it's a negative culture. So, Our Lady then spoke about, "If not, she will spread errors throughout the world, causing wars and persecutions of the Church. The good will be martyred, the Holy Father will have much to suffer, various nations will be annihilated." So we're still living through that, and we're still, for example, got nuclear weapons. So things, you know, there could be some sort of nuclear, hopefully not a war or anything, but they could get used again. So the message from that aspect too is important. But this is the great promise Our Lady made at Fatima then. In the end, my Immaculate Heart will triumph. The Holy Father will consecrate Russia to me, and she will be converted, and a period of peace will be granted to the world. So that, again, illustrates the importance of Fatima, that there's this, the promise attached to it is this promise of peace in the world. Now, if you look at the state of the world, the moment, it's a long way from peace. Somehow, all the warmongering that's going on, the wars which you hardly ever hear about in Africa and places, Yemen, all that's got to somehow, you know, be brought to a stop. The sort of violence of Muslim jihadists, and there is a connection because with Islam, because of Fatima was the daughter of Muhammad, and so Our Lady appeared at the only place in Portugal with that sort of connection to Islam. So, and there's quite a lot about Our Lady in the Quran. So that is a way to reaching Muslims. And hopefully, at the fullness of time, that's what will happen. Okay, so that was the second part of the secret. And the third part of the secret came out in the year 2000. I'll mention that later on. So now, would you very briefly just talk a little bit about the miracle of the sun? So Our Lady, 3 months in advance, she predicted the miracle of the sun. And the 70,000 people, so there was quite a percentage, you know, I think the population of Portugal at the time was 7 million. So it was about 1% of the population turned up. And it was a miserable day, it was pouring with rain, it was October, because, you know, it's high up on a hill, Fatima, almost a mountain, so it gets very cold and wet in the winter. And boiling hot, it used to be boiling hot in the summer, now because of the climate seems to be changing, for whatever reason, it's not quite so warm. But anyway, Our Lady came on October the 13th. She wanted a chapel built, continue pray the rosary, and she promised that the war would end. And Lucia then made some requests. And then Our Lady said, you know, do not offend the Lord our God anymore, because he's already so much offended. And that was one of the things Francisco the children saw Our Lady and Christ in the light from her hands. And that was one of the things that Francisco picked up in this vision of God, exactly how we don't know, that God was very sad. Jesus, the Sacred Heart, you know, was very sad with all the sins in the world. So obviously, it's 1,000 times worse now than it was in 1917 for all sorts of reasons. So then Our Lady opened her hands again, reflected the light from there onto the sun, and then Lucia cried out, look at the sun. So up to this point, it had been pouring with rain, and everyone had their umbrellas up, and you can see that on the pictures. Then the clouds parted, and Lucia said, look at the sun. So they all looked up at the sun, and it was unlike the normal midday sun, which obviously you can't look at without blinding yourself. It was like a sort of a dull gray disc, like the description was mother of pearl, is what they... other people, the witnesses described it. And the sun then, gyrated, started to move around in the sky, like a firework, one of those, spinning fireworks, giving off light. But it wasn't in a chaotic way. The whole countryside would become yellow, maybe for, you know, a minute or something like that. Then it would turn to a yellow, it's a purple. And witnesses saw this, and you know, it was impossible not to deny. Now, while the children were seeing, the crowd was seeing the miracle, the children were seeing a vision of the Holy Family. And they saw Our Lady, St. Joseph, and the child Jesus. So they saw the mysteries of the rosary with the finishing up with Our Lady of Mount Carmel. And that's where, actually, Our Lady was holding the scapular. So that's where the Fatima connection with the brown scapular comes in. Now, the scapular goes back to St. Simon Stock and was actually given in this country, the brown scapular, in either Aylesford or Cambridge. I'm thinking of Oxford, Cambridge. Cambridge. There's a sort of slight dispute over it. But anyway, it was definitely in this country, the brown scapular. Does anyone wear the brown scapular just out of interest? Yeah, some of you got it. Well, you should. I'm sure you've got a repository in the church, I imagine, and you've got brown scapular. So definitely get a brown scapular, because it's a sort of a promise of getting to heaven. You know, you're avoiding going to hell. She said, this is what a lady said to St. Simon Stock. This will be for you and for all Carmelites the privilege that he who dies in this will not suffer eternal fire. Well, it's like the Carmelite scapular, which it went over the habit, but now it's been shrunk down. So the scapular is just a little small piece of cloth, and it's been extended to everyone. Anyone can wear the scapular. So you haven't got to be a Carmelite. There's a great promise there of eternal salvation. So that's what the children saw anyway. So coming back to the miracle, 70,000 people saw the miracle, the sun going around like a Catherine wheel, you know, firework, these shafts of light. So there was a book written saying it was due to the weather. Well, the weather is sort of chaotic, you know, lightning flashing and the wind is blowing, etc. Clouds are moving. This was very measured and slow. It was exactly designed so you could not say it was the weather. It could, you know, it had to be something miraculous. And also, people thought from miles away saw it as well, who weren't expecting to see anything. So it was a definite supernatural sign, but it was only seen over a certain area. And one reason for that was because the children were kidnapped in August 1917 by the local mayor. And if he hadn't done that, and he threatened them with death, he was threatened putting them into boiling oil, and they did not reveal the secret. So there was a sort of martyrdom there on their part. They were prepared to be martyred rather than give up the secret. But anyway, if he hadn't done that, the miracle would apparently have been seen over a much wider area. So it might have been all over Portugal, or maybe into Spain. You know, so that shows that when people, if you like, do bad things against God, it has consequences, you know. And so, again, just showing some of the characters who are on the sort of fringes of the whole Fatima story. And also, when the miracle, the main newspapers, you know, and the commentators have all gone to Fatima to mock and say, oh, this will be a great fiasco, nothing will happen. And then when the miracle of the sun happened, quite a number of them were converted. And that was the big reason why eventually Portugal was converted, you know, because there was a Masonic government in charge at the time. And from that point on, you could say that the hardcore atheists sort of lost heart a bit. The ones who'd seen the miracle, because they couldn't deny it. They didn't necessarily accept it, but they, you know, that stopped them in their tracks. And although there were a lot of problems still, you know, later on they tried to blow up the little chapel that was built in Fatima, and there were coups and counter-coups, and it was a bad situation. But one of the people who'd gone to Fatima had been a journalist on one of the main sort of secular papers, and he'd gone there expecting to mock, but then when he saw what happened, he wrote a truthful article, which it's in quite a lot of the books, and it's certainly on the internet. The front page shows the picture of the children, and then the headline is roughly translated from Portuguese, saying, "When the sun danced at midday at Fatima." So he gave a truthful account of what had happened. He still sort of kept a bit reserved from it, and saying, "You know, people saw this, people saw that," but he gave a truthful account which showed it was a miracle. And his fellow sort of Freemasons, you know, gave him a hard time for being so truthful. But he just said what he saw, and he was being truthful. So, I mean, this is what he said. His name was Abelino de Almeida, and he wrote in a secular paper called O Seculo, the Century. "One could see the immense multitude turn towards the sun, which appeared free from clouds and at its zenith. It looked like a plaque of dull silver, and it was possible to look at it without the least discomfort. Before the astonished eyes of the crowd, whose aspect was biblical as they stood bareheaded, eagerly searching the sky, the sun trembled, made sudden, incredible movements outside all cosmic laws. The sun danced according to the typical expression of the people." So he was being honest, that was what he saw, and he was a completely, the last person you would have expected to come out with such a, you know, a statement. So that's the two apparitions I wanted to talk about. Now, just to emphasize about the rosary, how important the rosary is, each time Our Lady appeared, six apparitions, pray the rosary every day in order to attain peace in the world and the end of the war. And at the end, at the October the 13th, she said, I am the Lady of the Rosary, continue always to pray the rosary every day. So the rosary is so important that she took her name, if you like, at Fatima from the rosary. Whereas at Lourdes, she said, I am the Immaculate Conception. At Fatima, she said, you know, I am the Lady of the Rosary. So that is the most important thing we can do to fulfill what Our Lady asked for, is to pray the rosary every day. It takes about a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes. It was nice tonight, we just prayed the rosary in church, so if you live locally, you can just come along and pray the rosary in the evening. And in fact, the more people get together, it's more powerful. I'll explain that in a minute, excuse me. I've got about a quarter of an hour, I suppose. I'll see how much I can get through anyway. Just to give you an idea of the importance of the power of the rosary, there's a famous battle called the Battle of Lepanto, and this took place in October 1571. So this is one of the reasons why, you know, October is a month of the rosary. And at the time, Europe, Western Europe, and what was the Ottoman Empire then, over in Turkey, they were much more evenly matched militarily. This was before all, you know, science and all the modern weapons came in. And in some respects, they were superior because Europe was divided because of the Reformation. So you had the sort of Protestant North and the Catholic South, and the Ottomans decided to invade Europe, and they assembled this big invasion fleet, and the Pope and some of the Southern European states got together a much smaller fleet to stop them, or to try and stop them. So it was a bit like the Battle of Britain. You know, you had all the German planes versus the British planes, and the RAF were on the defensive. It was the same type of situation. So the Pope, Pius V, who was a great and holy Pope, he was a Dominican, he called for all Europe to pray the rosary for victory. And against all the odds, the wind changed just at the right moment for the Christian fleet. They totally destroyed the Ottoman fleet. And at the time, a lot of the boats were galleys rowed by slaves. And there were quite a lot of Christian slaves. And they were freed by the Christian forces when they captured the boats. And they joined in the battle against the thing. So that was anyway. And Pius V, at the moment of victory, he had a vision of what actually happened in Rome. So Lepanto is over in the eastern Mediterranean, underneath Turkey, south of Turkey. And the Pope was in Rome, probably 1,000 miles away, and he knew that the victory had happened. And that's where we get the Feast of the Holy Rosary. So the rosary then saved European civilization, because if they hadn't been able to stop that invasion, they would have overrun Europe. And that you'd have had, like, just like the thing with ISIS, that sort of slaughter and mayhem in Europe then. And then about 100 years later, we get the Feast of the Holy Name of Mary, and that came from the Battle of Vienna. And a similar sort of situation, except this time the Ottomans invaded by land, and they reached Vienna, which, if you look at the map of Europe, is about halfway across Europe. And they were stopped by the Polish king, Sobieski. He had about 80,000 men, and the Ottoman Empire had about 130,000 men. So it was the same sort of imbalance. And he put his army under the protection of Our Lady, and he attributed the victory to her. It was the greatest cavalry charge in history. 20,000 of his men on horseback, they charged down at the Ottoman lines, and they totally smashed them, and they broke the siege and destroyed the army. So again, without that, they would have just overrun the whole of Europe. So devotion to Our Lady and the Rosary, those two cases brought about, you know, huge changes. And also, more recently, it's not just sort of ancient history, if you like, it's quite recent as well, within living memory. After the war, Austria was divided up into four zones, just like Germany, as a sort of, punishment, if you like, because Austria had been joined and linked with Germany in the war. They'd been joined. And so the Allies had different zones. So you had the Russian zone, the American zone, the French zone, and the British zone. And that happened to Germany. And the German zone eventually became East Germany. They didn't give it back. And with Austria, the eastern part of Austria is where Vienna is, and that was the Russian zone there. And this Father Pavelchuk, who was a Franciscan, so another connection, he started a rosary crusade in Austria from 1946 onwards. And his aim was to get, or eventually it got 10% of the people in Austria praying the rosary. So the population of Austria then was about 7 million. So he got 700,000 people in Austria praying the rosary every day for the intention that the Russians would leave and there would be peace in the country. And he organized candlelit processions. He knew the president in Vienna. So it spread all through the country. And of course, the people had the Russians in their country, so there was quite an incentive to pray. You know, it was sort of wasn't happening somewhere else. It was there. So then on the upshot of it was, on the 13th of May 1955, Soviets announced they were willing to withdraw from Austria and sign a peace treaty, which they didn't do for any of the other countries, you know, in Eastern Europe or the ones that they had occupied. And that's the only time they voluntarily withdrew. Now, if you look at the map of Europe, the eastern part of Austria is sort of nestled in between what is now the Czech Republic to the north and Hungary to the south. And the next year, there was seeing that the Russians had left Austria, the Hungarians thought, well, we'll have an uprising and we'll get rid of the Russians. But they didn't, they weren't able to do it, and that revolution was put down. And the same thing happened in Czechoslovakia in 1968. It was put down. So the question is, why did they leave Austria and not leave the other two countries? I think the answer must be because so many people were praying the rosary. 700,000 people. And the reason why that's so powerful is because St. Louis de Montfort, who's a famous Marian saint, who's written the True Devotion book and also The Secret of the Rosary, which you can get, they're on our website. So if you look at the little sheet and it's got the web address and you can see details about them. What he said was that if you pray the rosary, like if I just prayed the rosary myself, that's one rosary. When we pray the rosary over there in church, it's probably about 20-odd people. I'm not sure exactly how many. But that's the same as if each person has said 20 rosaries. There's a multiplying effect. And if we all said the rosary now, that'd be even more. So when you go to Lourdes or Fatima and you've got 1,000 people or 10,000 people saying the rosary, it's like as if you have said 10,000 rosaries. You've only said one physically, but you've joined in all the others and it's multiplied together. So when the 700,000 people in Austria were saying the rosary, the actual number of rosaries was 700,000 times 700,000, which is something like 49,000 million rosaries. So that's the power of the multiplying effect. So that's why it's important so that's where that comes in. So what we really need in Britain is the same sort of thing. We've been trying to promote it in the World Apostolate, to have a rosary crusade. You know, it's the same sort of thing, people praying the rosary for the conversion of Britain, away from the culture of death. So that's something that's worth doing. But I'll briefly just mention the Five First Saturdays so I don't go on for too long. The Five First Saturdays. So that was one, if you remember, going back to July, the July apparition. That was when a lady said she'd come back for the two things, the first Saturday's devotion and the consecration of Russia. So she came back in 1925 to Sister Lucia, who by now she'd grown up a bit and she'd become a postulant with the Dorothean order. She'd gone to school with them and then she decided to stay on as a Dorothean. But later on in 1948, she became a Carmelite. So she was a postulant and she had a vision in the 10th of December 1925, Our Lady with the child Jesus. And the child Jesus spoke and spoke about, you know, the need for reparation, that Our Lady's Immaculate Heart was being pierced by thorns, you know, which there was an image of thorns. So that was all the sins. And she said, you try to console me and say that I promise to assist at the hour of death with all the graces necessary for salvation all those who on the first Saturday of five consecutive months go to confession, receive Holy Communion, recite five decades of the Rosary, and keep me company for a quarter of an hour while meditating on the 15 mysteries of the Rosary with the intention of making reparation to me. So if a person does this devotion five Saturdays in a row, it's got to be consecutive, you get a similar sort of promise to the brown scapula of this promise of salvation. In other words, at the moment of death, you will be in a state of grace. If you know, Our Lady will arrange things so that you are in a state of grace, and then you'll get to heaven. You might have to go to purgatory first, but you'll definitely get to heaven. So that's the promise associated with it. And to do that, you've got to do five things. So confession, that can be, you know, 8 days before or afterwards, or even longer, as our Lord said to Lucia later on. Receive Holy Communion. So ideally in Mass, but say, for instance, I don't know, somewhere in the middle of Africa or somewhere where they don't get Mass very often, the person, you know, they could just receive Holy Communion, the Blessed Sacrament's there. So it's designed to make it as easy as possible. Say the Rosary five decades and a quarter of an hour meditation. So the Rosary plus the meditation should come to about half an hour in total. And the way we do it, we've got a little leaflet. I haven't got any of the leaflets, unfortunately, but you can get it all through the website, is to do a 3-minute meditation, then the decade, 3-minute meditation. So instead of having to do the 15 minutes in one go, which can be quite hard if you're not used to thinking about things, you do, you know, split it up that way, and it can be done. And it's all got to be done with this idea of reparation to Our Lady. So the thing to do is, before you start it, you say, make an intention of, I'm going to do this now, these five first Saturdays, all with this intention of making reparation. And then, somehow, the five first Saturdays, through Our Lady's Immaculate Heart, we don't know how, but somehow, what we say gets multiplied, and it's just like with the rosaries multiplying, and then things can start to change in the world, just as happened with the consecration of Russia and the collapse of communism. So that was that. Then she came back then in 1929. Our Lady came back, showed our Sister Lucia when she was in a different convent in Spain, a place called Tui, and Sister Lucia saw a vision of the Trinity, of God the Father above a cross with Our Lord on the cross, and then Our Lady underneath, and there was a chalice, and the blood was dropping, into the host above the chalice, into the chalice. And then Our Lady said, "The moment has come in which God asks the Holy Father, in union with all the bishops of the world, to make the consecration of Russia to my Immaculate Heart, promising to save it by this means." So this was now the request for the consecration of Russia. Well, unfortunately, for all sorts of reasons, which I haven't got time to go into, that consecration wasn't done until the 1980s. There were various attempts, but it needed to be done with all the bishops, in union with the bishops, and with the Pope, and with various conditions. That was called the collegial consecration, because it's the Pope and the College of Bishops. So I've got a few things on Pope John Paul II. Unfortunately, I'll have to skip over them. But basically, when he went to Fatima, he was saying the Church has accepted the message of Fatima, because it's a renewal of the gospel. The consecration was done in 1984. From that point on, that was when things started to change in Russia. Gorbachev came to power. Only 5 years after that, in 1989, the Berlin Wall came down. So the whole thing had collapsed by 1991. Now, contrast that with what happened in China with Tiananmen Square, where the communists dug their heels in and are still in power now, and really, the way that things are shaping up, China is, could be a big threat. But that shows there was no consecration involving China, and there was no power of the rosary and so on. So the changes in Russia, they were virtually without a shot being fired, without any bloodshed. So that's the power of the consecration. But, obviously not everyone accepts it's been done, but the thing what we feel in the World Apostolate is that What's missing is the other thing Our Lady said you come back to ask for, the first that is devotion. The two things are linked. I don't think it's going to be the case you get the conversion of Russia fully until you get enough people doing the five first Saturdays devotion within Catholics around the world. Now, at the moment, it's not done in very many churches at all. I mean, I'd be surprised if it's done in even 1% of the churches in England and Wales. So it needs a huge movement to get the five first Saturdays done, because then people will start to be going to confession more often, they'll be saying the rosary, and that's when you get the grace for changes to happen. But it's not going to happen unless we do something about it, you know. So that's the five first Saturdays. So those are the two things I really wanted to mention. I'll just very briefly, and I'll finish up now in a minute. There's the whole thing of the holiness of the lives of the children, which I can't even mention, you know, go into any detail in, but their sanctity. And so I recommend you to, there's one particular book, the Sister Lucia's memoirs, which is really worth reading. That gives you a really good spiritual reading of what they were like as in their holiness. The third part of The Secret, that came out in the year 2000, and that was essentially about the persecutions that the church went through in the 20th century. Now, at the end of that, a pope was killed. It could refer to John Paul II, the assassination attempt, or it could refer to a future death of a pope. We just don't know. But anyway, that is just again to show that Fatima is still very relevant. And just to mention about the five first Saturday, this is what Sister Lucia said in 1939 to emphasize why these two things are joined and so good and so important. World war or world peace depends on the practice of the devotion to the first Saturdays as well as the consecration to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. That is why I wish for its propagation, most of all because that is our God's will and also our dearest Heavenly Mother's. So the first Saturdays, the Rosary and the consecration to Our Lady are so important that, you know, that really the peace and war in the future depends on it. It depended then and it still depends now. So there's the power of the whole Fatima message, which really we're hardly aware of, you know, in this country or within the church in general, which is why so much needs to be done. So what can we do to help? Well, definitely pray the Rosary daily. That's very important. If possible, get the five first Saturdays going in your parish and promote the message of Fatima, books like Father Serafino's and other books. With the World Apostolate of Fatima, that started as the Blue Army. Some of you may have heard of it by that name in America in the sort of 1940s and 50s. And then once that was the Blue Army of Our Lady against the Red Army of Communism. And it became quite a very big membership. Now it's spread around the world and it's more international. So there's a lot of people in the Philippines, in India, and so on, you know, Africa. Also still in the US. But in Britain, we're still quite small, so we need to grow. But we are starting to grow, so things are happening. So the World Apostolate is the official Fatima organization, officially approved by the church. There are other organizations where they're not approved by the church. So, you know, please have a look at the website, have a look at the web addresses there. The popes are still, the other thing is the bishop in white who was in The Secret, the popes are really closely involved with the Fatima Secret. Pope Pius XII called himself the Pope of Fatima, Pope John Paul II. Pope Francis has also, you know, been associated with Fatima. But I'll just come back to what Our Lady said in 1917 in July. She said, in the July apparition, to prevent this, all those problems, evils in the world, I shall come to ask for the consecration of Russia to my Immaculate Heart and the communion of reparation on the first Saturdays. In the end, my Immaculate Heart will triumph. The Holy Father will consecrate Russia to me and she will be converted and a period of peace will be granted to the world. So that is really worth working for. So thanks for your kind attention. I hope that's given you a bit more information about Fatima. So, thank you.
Thank you very much, Dougal. Thank you very much, Donal. I don't know about you, but we can never hear too much about the rosary or the wonderful apparitions at Fatima. And it's wonderful to learn how contemporary both of those things, of course, are. And they remain at the heart of what we believe as Catholics. So now we'll just ask Father Serafino to say a few words about the book and its relevance for for us today. Thank you, Father.
Can I use your mic?
So just a few words, of course, because the conference was already very rich. Thank you, Donal, for your conference. You talk about Fatima. You might wonder how the book came to be written, maybe, yes? Actually, I wasn't prepared to publish a book on Fatima because there is a very rich, beautiful literature on this very great apparition. But the centenary came last year, so 2017, and I have been several times to Fatima to preach, especially to give some spiritual retreats to lay people. 2 or 3 times with Italian groups, and once with an English group last year. Some of the parishioners were with me. So I have been to Fatima several times, preaching, reflecting, meditating on this beautiful message. And I wasn't meaning to write a book, to publish a book on Fatima, but as I said, the centenary came, and I said, what should I do in order to honor Our Lady of Fatima and to do something more special for this great message? I had already some material prepared, because, as I said, in giving some talks during the several spiritual exercises I preached in Fatima, I got some material. And suddenly, one day, I was just going through this material in my computer, and I got the idea, look, this is a good moment maybe to publish a book, because I got already some material, especially the apparitions explained to the people. And I said, this is maybe a good moment to use this material to add something else, especially the meaning of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, the importance of the consecration to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. So I put more things together, and the book came to be published. First in Italian, the date of the publishing was the 13th of May 2017, and I was very happy to mark this centenary with a little offering to Our Lady with this book. And then almost a year after, the book has been translated into English by an English translator and proofread by Jacob, the parish secretary. I'm very grateful to Jacob for his very careful proofreading, and Father George as well. Our confrère was also helping very much. He's very meticulous. He was a professor of English, so very meticulous with my book. Anyway, very grateful to Jacob and Father George for proofreading the book. And finally, the book has been published in English too. There were also some reviews of the book, waiting one from Donal very soon. And thanks be to God, the book is doing something. My hope when I published it was to, of course, to make Our Lady known, to make this message known, and to reach out to other people, to bring more people to Our Lady. Because as Donald pointed out, I'm very convinced that the central point of Fatima, the very key note of Fatima, is the consecration to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. God wishes to spread devotion to my Immaculate Heart. It is God's will to spread devotion in the world to my Immaculate Heart. I will come to ask for the consecration of Russia and, of course, of the world to my Immaculate Heart. So I think that that consecration is very, very central, and that act of devotion, which is the consecration, is also explaining in synthesis, the very nature of this supernatural message approved by the Church, and a message which, according to my opinion, is very relevant for the Church today. It is concerning Russia and the fact that Russia would have spread her errors throughout the world. But as I try to do in my book, reading especially the vision, the third part of the secret, in a more symbolic way, I think that that vision is telling us something of the present moment, not only in the world, but in the Church. I think this reading of a more symbolic, in a more symbolic way, is possible, because Russia is that nation, of course, where the revolution came to be, and the errors were spread from. And Portugal is a nation where Our Lady came, a geographical place, of course, where Our Lady came and appeared. But I'm also convinced that Russia is in a sense the figure of that ideology, materialistic ideology, going to be spread around the world. As Portugal is also that place where the message of Fatima is welcomed, and where the soul actually is responding to Our Lady's request to make this consecration to her Immaculate Heart and to do the five first Saturdays of the month. So I think that, for example, Our Lady says in Portugal the dogma of faith will be preserved. What does it mean? Of course, the Portuguese geographical place, but unfortunately now even abortion is legal, has been passed in Portugal, and the nation is not doing very well in terms of faith. So Portugal is also the every soul, every Christian soul that welcomes the message of Our Lady, and the response with this consecration to Our Lady. So I think the symbology of Fatima has to be always carefully examined, together with the historicity of this important prophecy, very relevant for today. This is what I wanted to say, to give you some more informations. With the book, and even without the book, there is an article to be given to everyone as a little present. This is an article I just wrote on the hidden secret of the Rosary. We already heard beautiful historical facts about the power of the Rosary. I try in this article to see the doctrine of the Rosary as highlighted by the popes, and the spiritual nature of the Rosary, combining doctrine and spirituality in this beautiful chain of roses that we offer to Our Lady when we pray the Rosary. So you have this little present with also the slip with the World Apostolate of Fatima website. Thank you for coming.